This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Lou Raisin, who's the president of Broadway in Chicago. As the president of Broadway in Chicago, Lou Raisin leads the five premier theater stages in the city, bringing an economic impact of more than $800 million annually to the city of Chicago and state of Illinois. There are 9,200 jobs directly related to theater in the city of Chicago and the surrounding area. Lou created and currently chairs the board of Luma 8, Light Up My Arts, an entity of which currently supports the Arts in the Dark Parade and the Riverwalk Lantern Festival. Lou also serves as the catalyst for both the $9 million permanent light art installation on the back wall of the Merchandise Mart and a digital platform for tourism. Lou's theme was that artists are continuously pushing boundaries, and the political powers to be should realize that and realize how art is important in the city of Chicago or any city that has financial problems and increased violence. Supporting the arts and culture, he says, should be a mandate. Until he started Broadway Chicago 19 years ago, Chicago theater was known as a bus and truck town. Bring a play from New York, plays here for a few nights, and then off to the hinterlands. But now, Chicago is the third most important commercial theater city in the world, behind New York and London, according to Mr. Raisin. 50% of the audience comes from 100 miles away. There are 250 individual theaters that make up the League of Chicago Theaters, and every one of them is an economic engine as well as an artistic and cultural engine. Theater is tied to tourism. Chicago will increase as a world-class city as our theater and culture and arts increase. Lou Raisin argues that culture adds to the quality of life. It's a way of luring and keeping the best young talent in the city of Chicago. Culture is hip, relevant, a place to be. Leisure tourism has increased 6% in Chicago in the last year. 39 new hotels in the last 5 years in Chicago, 8 in 2019. And the reason why we want to attract international travelers is they stay twice as long as local people, and they spend three times as much. He talked about lighting up the city on a grand and human scale. He talked about noise in the city with artists using sound as well as light and paint and other techniques. He talked about emotional attachment. Government understands culture. He discussed the role of Richard Michael Daley and Rahm Emanuel in pushing culture in the city of Chicago. He concluded by arguing that art is a force for good. It's not a luxury. It's the glue that holds our civilization together and defines who we are and what we are. Art can be useful in building trust, bridges, and conquering differences.
Let's see how this goes. I'm an unabashed capitalist with the love of the arts and what the arts can bring. In this time of political change and challenges, we need to focus on the arts more than ever. I want to speak to the power of arts and culture in our city. To echo the words of John Kennedy and Ronald Reagan, if not now, then when? If not us, then who? Arts and artists live on the cutting edge, the tip of the sword. They are the proverbial canary in the coal mine. Artists live in a space of exploration, constantly pushing boundaries, challenging norms, and reacting to threats and injustice. I want to remove the stigma that talking about arts and culture is somehow frivolous when we have a city with huge financial and gun violence issues. Those issues are critically important, but so is arts and culture to our city. I hope you walk away today with a renewed appreciation of the huge role that arts and culture play in our city's coffers, in the future of our city, and in each and every one of our lives, and that you join me in making sure there is always political alignment in our city, in our state, for arts and culture. At the onset, I want to take a few minutes to share with you some of my background so you understand where I come from on this issue of arts and culture. I want to take you on a journey that explores why artists do what they do, the value of the arts, and how arts responds to the world, and why we need it now more than ever. This is a call to action. Supporting arts and culture should not be an option. It should be a mandate. The first part of my career was in the music business. I built Poplar Creek Music Theater, a 25,000-seat outdoor amphitheater outside of Chicago, and from there went on to develop and construct and operate 7 other large-scale amphitheaters throughout the country, until we divested our amphitheater holdings in 1998 to what is now Live Nation. I founded Broadway in Chicago in 2000. Prior to then, Chicago is what the industry refers to as a bus and truck town, where the shows were few and far between, and we only had one commercial operating theater in the city. Back then, everything west of Manhattan was referred to as the road. Now, it's New York, Chicago, and then the road. Today, I'm proud to say that Chicago is the third most important city in the world for commercial theater, behind New York and London. Our 5 venues have an annual attendance of up to 1.8 million people a year, with an economic output of just under $1 billion annually, supporting 9,200 jobs. Over 50% of our audience comes from 100 miles away or more for our long-run shows. It's numbers like these that have allowed us to successfully pursue pre-Broadway tax credits for our pre-Broadway and long-run shows. Shows like Kinky Boots, Cher, and Tootsie. Shows like Jersey Boys, Wicked, and Hamilton, brought to our city and state with the support of our tax credits. These numbers are just Broadway and Chicago's 5 theaters. But there are 250 theaters that make up the League of Chicago Theaters. And they touch all of our city, not just the Loop. And every time a theater develops in our city, it has an impact. It becomes an economic engine that's felt by the community. While Broadway in Chicago allows us to boast about being the third most important city in the world for commercial theater, I argue there is no other city in the world for theater like Chicago. From a 60-seat theater under a viaduct to our 5 Tony Award-winning regional theaters, with the 250 theaters that make up the city, there is more new work on the stages of Chicago on any day than any other city in the world. If Austin, Texas can proclaim themselves to be the music capital of the world, there's a big friggin' flag we should be planting in Chicago to celebrate who we are. The mayor has proclaimed 2019 as the year of theater in Chicago. We need to take this moment to tell the world what we already know, to invite them to experience theater in Chicago, to help them understand what being touched by arts and culture is all about, to understand that the majority of the people that earn a living in theater in this country have either started in Chicago or have made their way through this city, to understand with all the startup theatrical companies, Chicago is the Silicon Valley for theater, to share the magic that happens on our stages in Chicago every night throughout our city, in every part of our city. While theater is my profession, I spend a lot of time at the intersection of art, culture, and economic development. And often that economic development side is tied to tourism. A few years ago, Lawrence Geller, a lifelong hotelier and founder of Strategic Hotels, and I, a couple of crazies, worked on reimagining tourism for the city, a move to change the perception of Chicago from the old guard to vanguard, a move to add millions of new tourists to the city, to increase the length of their stay, and ultimately increase the tourism spend. We studied the most successful tourism cities in the world and came up with a list of nearly 50 concepts we thought we might employ. We looked at the list of top cities around the world, and Chicago didn't even make the list. Chicago's a great world-class city the majority of the world doesn't know about. We brought in the Boston Consulting Group to work with us and personally funded them. BCG tested our concepts regionally, nationally, and internationally, and those concepts that topped the list became our mandates. I want to share a couple of those concepts with you, lighting and communications or branding. But to understand tourism in Chicago is to understand arts and culture. Chicago is a world-class city for more reasons than just theater. Our museums, our symphony, our opera, our dance, our music. From a tourism point of view, culture is what differentiates Chicago from all other cities. And whenever we can support culture, it not only has a positive impact on tourism, it adds to the quality of life for all of us that live here. What do tourists do when they travel? They take pictures. And they post those pictures on social media so they can share their narrative with others. Today's photos are geotagged, and the locations are noted as to where those were taken. And when we plot those images that have been geotagged on social media, we see a heat map of our tourists. And what's it tell us? It confirms that our tourists are celebrating arts and culture in our city. The health and vitality of a city is in its population, and luring and keeping the best and brightest young talent is key to a city's success. BCG told us we had a communications problem telling the world what Chicago was all about. So we needed to find a way to tell our story. For example, the Dutch use cycling as a tool to talk about themselves. Along those lines, we met with the 4As, the head of the 42 ad agencies that reside in the city. We told them we had something in common. We looked around the boardroom and told them they were all worthless without the people in their shop. We told them that they were in competition not only with the people sitting next to them, but with every other city in the country and every other country in the world for the best and brightest talent. We said we have that same issue for tourism. We both need to communicate that Chicago is hip, it's happening, it's relevant, it's the place to be. So what did those ad agencies focus on to speak about Chicago? Just like when World Business Chicago pitches the city, it's our culture.
A guy once said, make no little plans. In other words, be part of something today. Be part of the sunrise. Be part of a new day. Be part of something bigger than yourself. Be part of history. Be part of a legend. Be part of an idea. Be part of a city. Be part of the people who make it come to life. Be part of the language that they speak. Be part of its shoreline and its skyline and its bloodline. Be part of its past and part of its present. Be part of the song that it sings and the story that it tells. Be part of its stone and its steel and its heart and its soul. Be part of something big today. Be part of something larger than life. Be part of something epic. Chicago.
While the National Endowment for the Arts shows us example after example of the economic value of the arts, it equates to 4% of the GDP. I argue its impact on Chicago's economy is much greater. But to understand the impact, you need to understand tourism. Tourism is a major growth opportunity for the city. David Whitaker, CEO for Choose Chicago, just announced the most recent findings. Our business travelers last year grew 3%, but our leisure visitors grew by 6%. We're approaching 58 million visitors, up over 4% over the last year's 55 million tourist record. Our visitor volume is up by 20% in the last 5 years. This growth has meant 39 new hotels. In the last 5 years, alone, 11 last year, and we're scheduled to open 8 more this year. International travelers are up 3.9% for the first 11 months in 2018. And why do we care about international travelers? They stay twice as long and spend three times as much. Tourism creates jobs, not just the ivory tower jobs, but jobs for people that need jobs, and it can provide a career path. It has a huge financial impact on the city and state, and it's all driven by arts and culture. The second major mandate from the BCG research was lighting. Done right, lighting is art. It can transform the way both visitors and residents perceive our city. BCG's testing indicated that any time we align lighting with something else, the value of that something else is dramatically improved. To that end, I headed up the lighting framework plan for the city. Our goal was not to light Chicago like Shanghai or Paris, but to create lighting that was unique to Chicago and that celebrates and enhances who we are. And if we're using light the right way, it becomes more than just an element. It becomes a connector. We had 110 firms from around the world form 12 teams to compete in imagining how to engage Chicago in light, and they delivered the goods. The Yon team focused on darkness, reminding us that the power of light comes from the dark, as the difference between day and night blurs. They envisioned these three icons, much like the church bells of old, ringing loud in light, indicating something of significance within the city. The architectural firm of RKTL suggests we consider Burnham's Emerald Necklace, strategically lighting our parks and boulevards throughout the city. Using light as an asset to enhance our parks, to create opportunities that drive tourists from one park to another, thereby increasing the economic viability throughout the surrounding neighborhoods for the benefit of our residents as well as our tourists. And with Gensler, we viewed the river and bridges in light as a world-class attraction, and the Merchandise Mart, a historic structure that speaks to the city's past, inside transforming into the new Chicago, a tech-rich environment that can be communicated on the outside in a way that's engaging to tourists and residents alike. Davis Brody Bond envisioned using the back wall of the Lyric Opera, adding a performance barge and a spectator barge, and projecting the grandeur and spectacle that's enjoyed by Lyric patrons inside onto the outside of the building. They envisioned the power of light in our subway as it travels through our city, and their vision took lighting from the grand scale to human scale by proposing an ecosystem that could support fireflies in an urban environment, allowing us all to be touched by these tiny beacons of light.
Thank you.
After heading up the lighting framework plan for the city, I founded a not-for-profit, Luma 8, Light Up My Arts. Luma's goal is to create conversations about Chicago that are heard around the world, tied to culture and often using light and scale as tools. To illustrate how Luma might use scale aligned with cultural initiative, think of that little yellow duck from our childhood. But this one's 100 feet tall. Most of us know of the $110 million improvement to the Riverwalk, but have you been there? Unless you know what you're looking for from Upper Wacker, visitors and residents might miss it. But a rubber duck like this might become one of those Instagram moments where you want to take a picture of yourself and send it to others. And those pictures are seen around the world. Think of the bridges opening in the spring as the duck is towed to its summer perch on the Riverwalk. This is an example of using scale tied to cultural alignment that Luma is all about. Luma currently produces the Arts in the Dark on the Riverwalk, a processional during the summer months, and the Arts in the Dark Parade, the week before Halloween, a curated nighttime parade that brings together our entire cultural community from all 50 wards. In a magical moment that celebrates our creative spirit and the amazing contributions culture makes to our city. A year ago on Columbus, we drew 220,000 people. This year, the parade moved to its new home on State Street. Mark Kelly, the city's cultural commissioner, was the artistic director that conceived of the parade and imagines it over time becoming Chicago's Mardi Gras. Out of the efforts with BCG and the lighting framework plan, on September 29th, you may have been at the unveiling of Art on the Mart, a $12 million permanent installation using light on the back wall of the Merchandise Mart. This was a philanthropic donation to the city, a grant to the city by the Vornado Trust. While this is a wonderful example of how to use light in action, we see it as only the beginning. But without political, corporate, and philanthropic alignment, where do we go from here? Another example of using art for good is the second not-for-profit that I founded in the last 2 years. It's called Beautiful Noise. It's a national effort that focuses on music artists as change agents and supports them in motivating millennials on a nonpartisan basis to vote. All artists have a dedicated and receptive fan base. And artists are not only passionate about their music, but they're often passionate about social good. As an example, an artist might be passionate about reforming the criminal justice system. We don't want to change her passion, but we want to enhance her voice and magnify it to her audience. So when she says, "You know how passionate I am about reforming the criminal justice system," she now says, "I can't do it alone. I need you, I need you, I need you, and the only way we're going to make a difference is by voting." This is one of those postcards to the artists about the effort called Make Noise Now. Culture. Used and abused. Nora Atkins, a curator for the Smithsonian, challenges us to think about how we value art. Last year, a Jean-Michel Basquiat painting sold for $110 million, the highest price ever achieved for work by an American artist. A painting by Leonardo da Vinci sold for $450 million, setting a new auction record. Last year, the Metropolitan Pier and Exhibition Authority sold a painting by Chicago artist Carrie James Marshall. They bought it for $25,000 in 1997 and sold it for over $21 million to Sean Puff Daddy Combs. What made the news? The price. But artists use their work to speak, and look at what they're saying. They're speaking of chaos, fear, and death, of salvation, of hope for the future. These are big, important artists, but when you look at these works and you look at the headlines, one might think, do I care about these because they're expensive and I think I'm supposed to? Or do I care about them because they move me? In our contemporary world, it's often hard to separate those two things. But what if we tried? What if we defined art's value not by its price tag, but by the emotional connection it creates between the artist and the audience, for the benefit it gives our society, and for the fulfillment it gives the artists themselves? Art often leads the way, and we need to recognize what art is telling us. Look at New York, in Lower Manhattan, Soho, in the 1990s. Artists congregated in lofts and galleries because of cheap real estate. Their galleries and art drew the public to areas they may never have explored before, until it became too cool and too high-priced and turned into the trendy, gentrified real estate it is today. Berlin is teeming with artists. There's an estimated 20,000 living and working in the city. They're attracted to the German capital by cheap rent and an abundance of studio space. And the city's carefree, freewheeling spirit with the cultural projects are generously funded by many of the large and powerful institutions in the city. Soho's gentrification and the rising real estate costs pushed artists to Tribeca, and now to Dumbo. And Dumbo's transformation, spurred by its low-cost rent, was embraced by the community, quickly fueling its growth. And today, artists are celebrating Dumbo on a grand scale, using the urban corridors as expressions of their art and facades as canvases for their creations. And it wasn't long ago that Chicago's Loop Theatrical District played host to porn films and kung fu movies. When its theaters and movie palaces were decommissioned or utilized for other purposes, the Loop's transformation started when Jane Byrne saw the opportunity to draw attention to these decaying venues. She created a festival that she dubbed Loop Alive, a series of events that brought the public's attention to what could be. Byrne was so pleased not only with the attention the Loop received, by the attention she received for herself at the same time. Byrne started to create festivals anywhere she could and as often as she could. Her name moved from small type at the bottom of the artwork to big type to the top of the artwork as she got closer to running for office. But it wasn't until Mayor Daley utilized tax increment financing to induce both private and not-for-profit money into the theatrical district that it moved forward in earnest. Mayor Manuel clearly understood the value of culture and the power of a show like Hamilton. Based on its sales, Hamilton is more powerful than any play the industry has seen before. Though I don't agree with the approach, in the middle of Hamilton's second year, he decided to increase the city's amusement tax from 5% to 10%. Taking advantage of this phenomenon. However, with few exceptions, his tax was applied to all commercial venues of 1,500 seats. In other words, just Broadway and Chicago shows. His Robin Hood approach was fueled by his political calculus that took into account that the majority of Hamilton's patrons were not from Chicago, that the increased ticket prices would only burden the affluent, and he understood that the added Hamilton tax would plow tens of millions of dollars into the city's coffers during the show's run. We need to see, when we see art organically sprouting in neighborhoods, we need to nurture it. Take the CIRMAC Creative Industries District, the clubs at Motor Row, the renovation of the Uptown. Supporting arts and culture not only becomes an economic engine within the community, it instills a sense of pride for all. Joe Nye, a professor at Harvard in the 1990s, developed a concept he called soft power, about the use of art and culture as an effective tool in diplomacy. Whether you like a work of art or hate it, art is ultimately about a conversation. In the early 70s, Richard Nixon's ping-pong diplomacy gave us a glimpse of how to penetrate walls. It was no coincidence that Elvis was stationed in Berlin during the Cold War. French philosopher Regis Debray says there's more power in blue jeans and rock and roll than the entire Red Army. Havel used rock and roll as the anthem for his revolution in Czechoslovakia. David Rothkopf wrote a cover story for Foreign Policy, and in it he asserts, art is a force of good. Art and culture is not a luxury. It's not simply the plaything of the rich. It's the glue that holds together civilizations. It's a tool that helps us build bridges and drives change in the world. It's the byproduct of civilization. Arts and culture is serious stuff. It defines who we are. But what is culture? It's expression. Our food, our music, our dance, our theater, our art, our religion. It's what makes us us. Even when politics attempts to muzzle or restrict a people, even when money constrains one's ability to engage in art, politics and money can't constrain the soul. The arts produced within a society, amplified and reinforced by custom, is perhaps the most powerful force on the planet, because culture is everywhere. From the food we eat, to the products of our genius, to the myths we live by, and the stories by which we identify who we are. It's where our system of beliefs come from, where you can touch hearts and our minds, where we can inspire and where we can drive cultural change from within. It serves as a celebration of the human condition. Art and culture allows us to express that, to explore that, to question that. Psychologists use art to reduce stress, to deal with trauma and regain memory. Storycatchers Theater engages incarcerated youth in theater while serving in Illinois prisons as an outlet of expression, allowing them to tell their own stories and transform their own lives. Teachers have often understood the value of art in our schools to help with communication, social responsibility, problem solving, and a host of others. I'm not here to say that art is the solution to our gun violence issues, but one group in Chicago sure thinks it can have an impact on those that have suffered and help combat it.
In Chicago in 2016, over 4,000 people became victims of gun violence. Over 50% of them were between the ages of 13 and 25 years old. That's why we're launching the National Youth Art Movement Against Gun Violence, to provide youth in neighborhoods besieged by gun violence with an opportunity to make their mark on the issue beyond news reports and statistics by using their city as a blank canvas.
The arts allow us to build trust in what we all have in common, to help us build bridges to understand our differences. That's why those who seek to break down or conquer societies often seek to destroy or steal great works of art, as they're seen more powerful and formidable than the enemies themselves. Art leads in ways politicians, executives, and generals cannot. One of the first meetings that Rahm took as mayor-elect was a breakfast with Michael Bloomberg, asking for advice. Bloomberg had one thing to say: tourism. The city made a big move in 2012, led by the then Commissioner of Cultural Affairs, Michelle Boone, in putting together the cultural plan. They framed it as a plan where the future of the city would assemble cultural activities abundant in every neighborhood, and citizens and visitors alike would be able to experience the vibrancy the city had to offer in arts and culture. It's not by accident that for 2 years in a row, the readers of Condé Nast Traveler voted Chicago as the number one big city. And look at what they've cited. Chicago is a world class in so many ways, and it's all about arts and culture. Our restaurants, our theater, our music, our museums, our dance, and the spectacular architectural views our tourists see when they look out the windows. 58 million visitors, 47 new hotels, 150,000 jobs, $1 billion in taxes. But maintaining the static level of funding for arts and culture and tourism means we're moving backwards. While the link between arts, tourism, and the city's revenues is powerful, the power of the arts is not in the numbers that it employs, nor in the dollars that it generates, but in those that it touches. This is a time when we need to look at what the arts are telling us. This is a time when we need to be talking to our political leaders about the power of arts and culture. This is a time when we can't just sit back and ride the wave. So if I ask one thing of you today, build a bridge. Engage a politician in a discussion about funding arts and culture and remind them of the power of tourism. Take a client to a cultural event. Sponsor the arts. Join a board. Engage in arts and culture. Thank you.
Absolutely wonderful, wasn't it? Talk about being a visionary. Lou, we're so delighted that you could come to us today, as you did several 18 months ago, to share some of those ideas and your vision. So we have time for questions. So if anybody has any questions they would like to ask of Lou, this is your opportunity. Just hold them up.
It's not required.
Here we go.
Right over here. Charlie, you've got
to answer the question, but you can't get one.
Well,
by the way, in case you weren't able to take down every thought and idea, we live stream this program, and we also offer a podcast in our partnership with WGN Radio. Very first question. This is from Lane Alexander with the Chicago Human Rhythm Project. Do you think the for-profit industry, the for-profit arts industry, invests in the nonprofit sector the way Ford invests in developing the next generation of
engineers or pharmaceutical companies invest in research. Bottom line, should the arts industry invest more in arts education?
I think when you talk about the commercial side of arts and culture, if you look at Broadway in Chicago and you look at the tens of millions of dollars that are going into the city's coffers from Broadway in Chicago, my argument is that we need to redirect funds that are going into the city's coffers to arts and culture. That from my perspective, if there's a Machiavellian concept behind today's presentation, I sit with a number of my other fellow board members on Choose Chicago here today. Choose's level of funding has been static, and we need to change that. And my proposal is that we look at the increment of funding of the hotel tax dollars that are going to the city and state today. Those dollars have already been committed in the city and state's budget. But an increment, any increment above that current level of funding, a percentage of those dollars I see in my head going to Choose directed to arts and culture in the city. That's what supports the engine. That's what drives everybody. That's what feeds everything that ultimately brings more tourist dollars to the city and state.
Okay, thank you, Lou. This is from proud City Club member. She wrote that down. Stephanie Lise Emmerich. Stephanie, where are you? Oh, right over here. Sorry. We're so glad that you're a proud member. We're delighted to have you. Stephanie's question is, she's with the Service Speaks and the National Customer Service Association. With the enormous increase of Chicago's tourism, how does BIC maintain its legendary service levels? If you're not familiar with BIC, Lou will enlighten you.
The reference to BIC is Broadway in Chicago, and I think it was meant to be a compliment, so thank you for that note. But, you know, I'll take that opportunity to talk about something else. Looking at politicians, it doesn't matter what question you ask. They answer the question they want to answer, so I'm going to do that. Though I'm not running for any office. One of the things that I think is really important is when we're talking about numbers of tourists, it's really irrelevant. As far as I'm concerned, fewer tourists is a great thing as long as they spend more. So it's about the spend. It's not the number of tourists. So if we're able to, in terms of the tourism industry, you think about it, it's referred to as the quality of that tourist. If we're getting more international travelers, we can do with a lot fewer local travelers. But what it's all about is we talk about the growth, as I alluded to in my presentation, the future of the city and the health of a city is in its population. And luring the best and brightest to the city, it makes sense from a tech standpoint, it makes sense from an educational standpoint, but getting them to stay here after they've been educated or after they've created their major tech something with Howard and his team. But it's the glue that holds them here is arts and culture. And that's the lure and the glue all at the same time. So all of you feed that engine. And I think this is a time, especially with the political changes that are taking place, we need to know that we've got a mayor coming on board that supports arts and culture, that understands tourism. We think we've got a governor that gets it. So let's hope this is that moment where we can grab it and run for the good of the city.
Well, thank you, Lou. In fact, Jan, I don't know what we're going to do with your question here. But guess what the next question was from Jan Costner, City Club member over here. How do we educate the next mayor to the importance of investing in tourism as an important part of economic development and not taxing it? Is there anything you'd like to add?
The one thing I want to add is the Arts Alliance is sponsoring a debate at Broadway in Chicago's Playhouse that's a couple weeks away. And we hope that resonates from that standpoint. Not all of the candidates have accepted the invitation to debate, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, thank you. By the way, you know that in Lou's presentation, he mentioned the 2012 tourism report, and he mentioned the then commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs, Michelle Boone. And Michelle was right there. I know, it wasn't a specter. She was right there. And the current commissioner and the person responsible for the wonderful Halloween Nights Walk, Mark Kelly. Mark, thank you for being with us. Now, this is a question from Susie Friedman. But before we ask the question, I just want to mention that Susie informed me at lunch that her granddaughter, who's graduating from eighth grade this year, has just been named one of the feature attractions in the school play. And in writing her little notes and the biographical notes that we all like to read in between acts and, you know, before the lights go out at the theater, she said she particularly wanted to thank her grandmother for taking her to all those plays and acting and dancing all over the many years. So, Lou, in a way, that's a tribute to you and certainly to Susie Friedman. Let's give her a big hand. Her question, could you talk a little bit more about the Luma 8 project?
So Luma 8 is this alignment that you saw. And the example that I used, is I think it's big and bold because it's easily to be understood, is the yellow rubber duck. It's an alignment that when we have a cultural something aligning scale and lighting with that initiative, we think that's where Luma goes to work. So Luma's objective is to focus on that sweet spot. And how do we build conversations about that cultural something that are heard around the world? So that little yellow rubber duck kind of tells Luma's story.
Great. And the that question about, you know, the barge by the Lyric Opera, and I have this question because when I'm not moderating City Club panels, starting in April, I'm a docent for one of the boat companies on the river in the lake. Is this barge idea going to happen, or is this just an idea?
I hope the lighting happens. The barge is really, it would be the icing on the cake, but communicating the spectacle and grandeur of the Lyric and inducing the focus on the Lyric. That's another example of how you use scale. So think about the Lyric subscription season. It's about to take place. 2 weeks before or the week before, all of a sudden this magic on the back wall of the Lyric comes to life. That brings the focus, the eyes of the city on the Lyric, understands that building is a special place. And that's the kind of thing that we need. Whether that barge is there or not, it would be great to have a barge that happens one night or two nights out of the year and a symphony playing. But think about sitting on Zell's Plaza, watching some incredible spectacle. The boats are going by. That's magic in Chicago.
And that's wonderful. By the way, you know, the Lyric is doing West Side Story late this spring. So that might be a wonderful time to have some projections from Zell's Plaza onto the backside of the Lyric. Let's see what we can work out. Okay, I have time for one last question. This is an idea. You know, as you go around the city of Chicago, there still are a number of buildings that on their rooftops have water tanks. Is there any thought of asking Chicago artists in that to design things, do something on those water tanks, which are pretty blah?
I think any time we can use some of those things that become part of Chicago's history in some way that looks to its future are incredible. I've met with and talked with the Design Museum for some time about a new home for them. And one of the thoughts we were kicking around is those bridges, that bridge that's stuck on the river in some crazy position that's been there forever, and you say, what is that doing here? Having the base of that become the home of something like the Design Museum becomes a pretty interesting story to tell and a way of focusing eyeballs and people in Chicago on a place.
By the way, that bridge that he mentioned, just as you turn the corner up at Wolf Point and head north, is one of the great photo ops for anybody who takes any of the architectural cruises in Chicago. Anyhow, let's give Lou a big round of applause.